Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 20. So just on the subject of Garbutt's employer, I know this is like further on in the period, but did you find out why this fella was killed?
Well, he was sort of the pawn in the way the thing worked. And there was two Russians, as I said, one was a white Russian and one was a Mongolian Russian. But they didn't treat them the same. The white Russian was treated better than the Mongolian Russian. And they didn't get on together either.
The two Russians
didn't
get on.
The Mongolian was not very much like Chinese. They really do. And he was the only Mongolian Russian in that village. There were some white Russians, and there were some girls, Ukrainians, yes, in the village as well. And they had the freedom of the village. They worked for different families, and they lived with different families. But they had freedom. There was also some French POWs. They had the same freedom of the village. They could go out. When they finished work, they were free in the village itself. Not far away was some Sikh prisoners of war. Now, I don't know where they worked, because they didn't work in Smedeville, so they obviously worked somewhere else. There was about 10 of them.
How many Russians were there, do you think?
The Russians, I should say that there would be about 7... Ukrainians, this one Mongol, the Chinese-looking Russian, and 4 Frenchmen. The Frenchmen used to come and offer us drink. We haven't got food parcels yet, but the Frenchmen didn't want all to do it with us until they thought they were going to get something out of us.
So until the food parcel started
until
arriving?
The first food parcel started arriving, the French didn't have a lot to do with it.
So what was their attitude in this early period before that?
Well, we didn't like the French.
Why not?
Well, we thought there was rubbish, didn't we? They didn't fight very well in France. This is only an opinion that we had.
And you talk amongst yourselves.
The High Tides and the Froggies were rubbish as far as soldiers went. And that was what we thought about them. The Russians, these are the first Russians we've ever met. And most of them, they weren't soldiers anyway. They were civilians who had been caught in villages which they fell into the German army and then were shipped back as slave labour.
And that was true of the Russian women as well, was it? The three Russian women.
There was only young women in 18, 20 years of age. But there was...
What condition were the French and the Russians in when you first...
They were better off than we were. There was... Because there was living as... And I think they got the same rations as the German people. You know, if you had a Russian working for you, then your household was 5 people. So you got rations for 5. Because their food was rationed the same as ours was. The bread we used to get 2 loaves of bread a day, and occasionally we'd get 3. Well, they kept the number of loaves we had. We used to allow so many loaves a month for the number of people that were in the lager, and it was kept in a little notebook. And I used to say I was fetching 3 loaves today. Now this book included Mrs. Price and her 2 daughters. So I was fetching 3 loaves, 2 for the lager and 1 for Mrs. Price. That would be wrote in pencil, first of the month. And when we get down to the 28th, we was running short of bread. So we used to rub the 3 off and make it a 2. And we can go further down, if we make 3 there, we rub that 3 off and make it a 2. So that we got maybe 3 extra loaves that month.
So were you were actually involved in getting this bread from
there? Yeah, you've got to fetch it. The bakehouse was behind the rat cellar was a square. The bakehouse was in there. There was a pub in there. There was a little grocery shop where I used to fetch cheese for Mrs. Price's father. And really, the bloody cheese could have walked from the shop itself. It was that high. He used to love it, apparently. And it used to stink to high heaven. It was sausage in shape, like a nice sized sausage. But oh, it used to stink. And it was, you couldn't cut it. You had to sort of spread it. It was like a soft cheese. But it was really...
So when you were involved in this kind of fetching and carrying, did you always have the German civilian with you?
No, it got to the time where I could walk about on my own.
Were you ever troubled by the authorities when you'd be just wandering around?
And most of the food had to be fetched from Fiedel's shop. I could go in there and because he knew where I was. I just got so I could walk about on my own.
Now, at this very early stage, what about the attitude of the Germans? Not the Germans that you knew, that you worked with, but just Germans on the street. What was their attitude towards the British prisoners?
Well, they were still... They didn't mix with us. They didn't accept us. They still thought they was on top. We knew, not them, but later on we got to know more about the war than they did. That they believed they was going to win the war and that we were just prisoners. And not only that, they had to be careful about mixing with POWs. The Germans always shake hands when they meet. And Mrs. Price, it was a habit. I once met her in the street. She was coming out of Ratskeller as I was going in. Because I was going to work and she might be good. She lived just across the road from the last car and we shook hands. And then two or three days later, the burgomaster sent for her for showing such friendship to the POWs in the street. And she was reprimanded by the burgomaster.
And so that stopped it?
Well, no, it did, but.
She was still friendly, but not in public.
She just had to be careful.
Now, you arrived in Germany, you described earlier, just with the clothes that you stood up in. You were in autumn 43. What was your clothing situation like, and how did you deal with it at this stage?
Well, we've got... The Germans issued us with some clothes for winter. There were French clothes, French greatcoat, French hats, wooden clogs. If your boots was worn out, they only replaced them with wooden clogs. And we was scruffy. Well, say scruffy. We didn't look smart like British soldiers. And then, if you on back of your tunics was a big red patch, and on the back of your top coat was a big red patch. On your trousers was patches, red.
And those were to signify that
they were POWs. Mm-hmm. And the French top coats was very, very thin. They weren't lined, so there was a patch on the British coat.
And as winter came on, how about the actual... were you warm enough? Did you have enough fuel?
Well, the first winter, towards Christmas time, we had a visit from the Swiss Red Cross, and they sent us so many top coats. There wasn't enough, and everybody didn't get one, but some of them had top coats anyway, so there was handed out to them who were fitted.
Could you describe that visit?
Well, he was just two Swiss, just like businessmen they were, and they came into the lager, along with the German Sergeant Major, and they'd come from 4B.
So he wasn't your guard, he was another...
He was the Sergeant Major of the local army, but the two Swiss people had been to 4B, to visit there, I would imagine, and then they come to visit us, and they were going to the various places where the men were working. And someone was working at Pretch, which wasn't far away from where we were. And they visited the Indian place as well, because the Indians complained about not being clean with the hair, and all they had no facilities for washing their hair properly. And that's when they first started to get organised with parcels, and after they'd been.
And so when do you reckon the first parcel arrived?
Well, I reckon it must have been either the end of that year or the beginning early on in the next year, because we must have been there 6 months before we got a parcel.
Mm-hmm. So that takes us beyond...
Because we used to pinch theatres and... Anybody who went... If you're on the staff, you went into all different places. We worked in the countryside, we worked in the woodyards. And if we found a potato field or a carrot field, we always managed to pinch some. We always took a haversack with us. I don't know what it belonged to, it belonged to somebody in the lager. But we always took a haversack with us. And potatoes or carrots, we'd pinch, we'd get some. We pinched them, didn't we? That was the new one. And take them back to the lager. And if we managed to get some potatoes, they would be roasted on the stove top. Very often they was eaten before they was done. Carrots, well, they were just washed and eaten. We didn't try to cook carrots. Anything what was edible was, and we had a chance to pinch it, we did. And it was shared among the people. Alfie Granger, and it's the same routine, you see. I didn't need to ever pinch food because I was going further. Alfie Granger, Rabbit, Chamberlain, Rolf, all of them work for individual employees. Well, I don't mean we were overfed, but we were better fed than the rest of them. So the potatoes were roasted, and I thought I'd very often eaten before they were done. I mean, a roast potato takes on the facilities we had. Someone would trim in the fire itself. Well, they got the outside burnt and the inside wasn't cooked. But there was hungry and that was it. Sometimes the brick firm workers would bring, they'd pinch some potatoes from somewhere else, or maybe somebody had taken some, you know, they was working with. But it was the same procedure. Cook them, bake them.
Now, were you allowed to write home?
Yeah.
And how often were you not allowed to do that?
I think we got a letter and a postcard once a month.
To send home?
Yeah. And what about... You had to be awfully careful what you wrote. You couldn't write, here I am in Mads Smedeberg along with Mrs. Price, or, you know, it was always telling the German bomber, the English bombers going over. Or, yeah, very often, and very, very often, I could either really fill a card or a postcard with, never mind a letter.
Because there was nothing you could say.
There was nothing to say. And I did write and say that there was told. I used to write about the girls, Inger and Trowdle. And my mother got the impression that I was going to finish up marrying one of them. You know.
And that the girls were who? They were.
They were Mrs. Price's daughters. One was a year younger than me, and one was a couple of years younger than me.
And so you were allowed to mention them?
I used to mention them, yeah. There's two daughters, and, you know, one was at school, and one worked in the factory. That was another thing in Germany. They all had a job to do. If you left school at 16, or whatever, Ingrid used to go to Wittenberg to school. Because she was at a higher education sort of thing, and she was 18. But at weekend, she had to do something at our own yard. There was, you know, all them sort of things. But child, because she was only 16, she had to do some. She worked for her mother. But they all had a job to do, even once they got grown up.
Now, I think you told me off the tape a story about listening to the radio and the two girls.
That was a little bit later.
That was a little bit later, so we'll get onto that later. Right. So, what about, I mean, you were brought up as a Roman Catholic. Was there any opportunities to...
No, no time.
There was no church
no
provision?
Church.
Did anybody complain about that?
No. The thing we talked about was the food we'd refused when we was at home, the plates we'd left with them, you know, food we'd wasted at home. And I mean, there was a mixture of, obviously, a mixture of religion, but I don't think religion was ever mentioned.
And so, your first Christmas, how was that celebrated, marked in the hut?
Well, we didn't have any parcels that first Christmas. The scatmen, the bathhouse people, Johnny Harley and Ray Smith and myself went to work on Christmas Day. But the first Christmas morning, I was laid in bed, and when I first woke up, Alfie Granger slept at the right hand side of me, and beyond Alfie Granger was Joe Washington. And I just woke up and Joe was awake, and I just said, Merry Christmas, Joe. And Joe jumped straight over Alfie Granger and jumped on top of him. He was going to thump him. Bloody, bloody Christmas, he said. I'm talking to bloody duck. Well, he didn't say bloody. And he was really upset with Joe that Christmas morning. We had some beer that Christmas morning. Mrs. Price bought two. Mrs. Price paid for it. And I carried two large bottles, I think the big gallon bottles of beer, black German beer for dinner time for the lager, which were all drank and appreciated. But it was black beer, very sweet beer. I don't think anybody could have got drunk on it. No, maybe could, I don't know. But the Frenchmen and the Russians, they were better off because they had Christmas with the Germans. Although the Germans had an awful lot to eat that time of day. They were on black bread as well.
So their rations weren't very high either.
And the coffee was ersatz coffee that was, they say it was made from acorns. I don't know what it was, you know. Mrs. Price in the cellar had a lot of bottled fruit. I mean, I've seen my mother-in-law bottle fruit and silver jars and kilner jars or something. She had a lot of bottle fruit in the cellar. She had sauce, bottles of sauce, and she had quite a bit of fruit stored in the cellar, which we used occasionally. We didn't use it very often, but she'd had the rats came before the war, you see.
Now, so this routine continued into 44.
Yeah.
Now, and you say the first Red Cross parcel took maybe 6 months.
I think we got them early in 44.
So can you remember when the first ones arrived and how you responded to that?
Well, the postman came and he said to Dickie Dunn, the postman always addressed he got so we could talk to him, but if there was anything officious, we said, we always did it through Dickie. And he told Dickie Dunn that there were some parcels that had been delivered to the station at Swedenborg, Red Cross parcels. And we had to go fetch them. How many there was, I don't know, but we only got one between two. The others were stored down at the railway station. And every so often, every 10 days, we'd go down and fetch 10 parcels. And they always brought them up on the handcart. And these parcels was British Red Cross. So they had Canadian cling.
Cling, which is the milk.
Yeah, well, it's milk, but that was into cling. It was powdered milk, biscuits, butter, cheese, oats, chocolate, cigarettes. And at this time, before them, the cross parcels arrived, there we got some cigarette parcels from home. He was the only one who got any. There were three cigarette parcels coming and there was all for him. What is the thought? He would at least give him a cigarette, yeah, you know. No, he didn't. He used to write a book, and when he finished smoking him, I mean, his dad's tongue was hanging out, and he'd just put him on the floor and scrub his. But the Georgie Gent sorted them cigarettes out later. He peed all of them. They had like a cupboard where things were kept, bowls and that sort of thing. And in the top was another little cupboard, and it was latted. It wasn't a solid cupboard, it was latted. And me and Georgie Gent once had to step behind to dig out the latrine. Out of it. And he said, I'll put two. You can see that's fine. And he urinated all of them, sort of packets then. Of course, all the cigarettes were. But he was showing what was happening.
So he wanted to keep them to himself?
He did, yeah. Mm. He was a little bastard, yeah.
Why? Was that just the look of the draw that one person would get a parcel
well,
from home?
Just, yeah, it was the same with mail.
So how often would the letters come from home?
Well, you might be looking. Davy was the luckiest lad there was with post. If there was any letters, you could guarantee there'd be one for him. I mean, I might get one a month. I might get. You often come, you know, maybe get two or three at the same time. My girlfriend was writing to me, my sisters was writing to me, my mother was writing to me. Davy, you could gamble if there was any post at all, Davy had a letter.
And how was the post distributed? How did you actually get this?
Well, it was given to Dickie Boone.
By the guard. And he would pick it up from...
Yeah. The guard would pick it up at the post office, or if parcels came through the railway station, he would pick them up. And he'd always be given to Dickie Dunn. And that's why Dickie was... It had some sort of go-between between the official sort of thing, anyway, and Dickie represented that part of it.
Now, so the first... These parcels arrived, you had one between two. They were taken up to the hut. Then what happened for this first...
We had a party. I think most of the food was eaten that day, that night, when we got the first parcel. And the cigarette smoke was as thick as could be. And I didn't smoke, so my cigarettes went into the kitty, into the pool. I didn't smoke and that was it. So there was no good to me. So Bill really got my cigarettes, because we were in Bill's yard at that time. But on the whole, the 20 men lived very well together. You know, in fairly good circumstances. We only had one who was... It was really off-putting, and that was in the little day when we were young, and they had bags of cigarettes.
So when these parcels, when they'd started arriving, and you know, your second part, you had to share with somebody else?
Well, I was got one between two. Mm. And there was tea in these parcels. So when you brewed up, we brewed up between two. And if now we've got things to battle with, so we start getting visit from the Frenchman, offering them snaps. But it was wood alcohol, which was, and the postman, he said, I can't stop. He said, it's impossible for me to stop you getting this stuff. He said, because I can't be with you all. He said, but I'll advise you to leave the snaps alone, because it can really damage your eyesight. And I don't think we did really try. And after that Christmas, after we first taken beer up, maybe every other Sunday or every third Sunday, she'd send 2 gallons of beer. So we got to be... Eventually, we paid for our own beer, but we could still only get... Maybe a couple of gallons on a Sunday, once every 3 weeks or something like that, because the beer was rationed.
Now, So the French that they'd offer you this alcohol, this dodgy alcohol. What else did they try to trade with you, and what else would you?
Bread. Because one of the Frenchmen worked in the bakery where we got our bread from. It was black bread, but it could obviously could even French in from the bakery. Or whether maybe even the bakery was doing it between them, I don't know. But he wanted English cigarettes if he could get them.
And so how many English cigarettes would get a loaf?
It varied. If he had some loaves that he couldn't sell, what he couldn't get shut of, then it maybe be 5 cigarettes for a loaf. But if he hadn't done it, if he hadn't worked bread and we wanted a loaf, it would maybe cost us 10 cigarettes. Everything varied in price. It was demand and supply and demand business, same as everything is in that family.
So they wanted English cigarettes. What else did they want?
They wanted cheese. English. It was proper cheese, English cheese. Or tea even. Because the Germans had never really... The Germans didn't drink tea same as we drink tea. German tea, you could... A cup of German tea, you can read the bloody newspaper through it. You know, it was just black tea with lemon in it. Mrs. Price started supplying us with lemons once we got tea. The sugar, we used to send too much sugar to Mrs. Price for making blancmanges and jellies, which was supplied. There was jellies in some of the parcels. There wasn't always a jelly in the parcel, but some of them were.
And so you would give her some of the.
Yeah.
For her own use as
well?
Well,
she did use it, obviously, but. And they bottled fruit when it was, you know, fruit season, they bottled fruit. So maybe we'd get pears with custard or pears in jelly. But it always depended on the Red Cross parcels.
So how did, when the Red Cross parcels arrived, how much improvement did that bring to your condition?
A lot. We didn't have to bother pinch. We did still pinch potatoes, not because we needed them, but because they made a variation of our diet. I mean, a roast potato, we had more time to roast them then. If you know, the lads weren't as hungry. We gave the potatoes time to cook. We used to cook them on top after that, so they was cooked steady. And we still pinch potatoes because, as I said, there's a variation of the diet, but we didn't need to be.
Now, you had these provisions, which you were trading some of these provisions from the Red Cross parcels. Did you trade with the Germans? With the German guard or with any of
you? The guard.
What about your fellow workers?
We traded with that unknown.
What did you trade with him?
What it was, he liked English cigarettes. And I mean, Otto would maybe bring some roast, some sausage. And we'd buy a sausage off him for so many cigarettes. But we didn't do it when Ernst was there, because Ernst was a bit of a Nazi. He didn't.
How did he show that?
Well, by being officious when, you know. I mean, Ernst, Otto, didn't have traded with us if Ernst was about. He dared to give us a sausage and he would never let Ernst catch him smoking English cigarettes.
And did you trade with the Russians? Or did they?
No, well, they earned lots of trade with Russians. One girl had earned him to trade, and that was, she was a milk girl. The only thing she had to trade was potatoes or, you know, fruit. What we produced on the farm. And as I say, after that, we didn't really want it. We weren't, even with the parcels, we weren't ever fed.